So we spent the last 2 weeks beginning, finally, to look at our theme for the year, which is back to basics, remember? And there's a lot more we can say and will be saying and thinking about that theme for the coming weeks and months, and we'll get back to that eventually. But today is a significant day on the calendar of the church, as you know. It's Palm Sunday. It's the beginning of Holy Week, or Passion Week, as some call it, the last week of Jesus' life here on earth. And as you know, because we talked about it at length last year, this was a week that featured lots of famous, I guess you could say, events in his ministry before we came to the arrest and the trials and the crucifixion. It included him driving the money changers out of the temple for the second time. Well, maybe the second time. We're not really sure whether he did it once or twice, but he drove the money changers out of the temple, which was amazing. And then, you remember he had an exchange with a fig tree. Remember a fig tree that looked like it should have fruit on it, but it didn't, so he cursed the fig tree and it shriveled up right there. Y'all remember that? We talked about last year. He had a time of pronouncing woes upon the religious leaders of the day. You can read it in Matthew. And he weeps over the city of Jerusalem. He was also anointed by a lady as he was eating a dinner there at a house. And then he had to defend her from the indignant and self-righteous disciples who were upset about the whole thing. So all of that was happening during the Passion Week. And, whoop, I've turned too many pages here, I'm sorry. But I'm thinking that there were a couple of things that Jesus was actually looking forward to with great anticipation in that week. And isn't anticipation a great word? Doesn't it make you think of great things? It's like Christmas Eve. Isn't that great? It's like the rehearsal dinner before the wedding. It's all of those things that you just can't wait that are going to be happening, and you've got that feeling of anticipation. And it's a wonderful event. Well, there were two events that I'm thinking about during the Passion Week that I think Jesus was greatly anticipating. One of them, of course, I think was this: the Palm Sunday triumphal entry into Jerusalem. And doesn't this picture, isn't this a great picture? I don't know who took this picture of Jesus, but it's a great picture. I mean, can you imagine how excited he was when this finally happened? Something that I'm sure he had been eagerly awaiting and anticipating. I think it's probably the greatest, most joyful moment of his entire ministry. The crowds were cheering. Everyone was happy. They're shouting, "Hosanna," which means "save us," which is exactly why he came, isn't it? And they were saying, "Save us." Well, I got to admit that for this particular one, when I say that I think Jesus was eagerly anticipating this, I'm speculating a little bit. There is no book, chapter, and verse that says Jesus was eagerly anticipating the triumphal entry. But I think I'm right. Don't you think that he was eagerly anticipating this? We know that he had already made arrangements with somebody who had a donkey. You all remember that? He had already done that before it ever happened. So he was thinking about this, and he was making arrangements to make sure that it happened, and that it happened in a wonderful and amazing and exciting way. So wonderful and amazing and exciting that it has become a great and huge part of church tradition and history and an annual celebration. So I think we're on pretty safe ground to say that this was a moment that Jesus eagerly anticipated. But the other one, the other event during the Holy Week, which I want to talk about today, is one that we know Jesus was eagerly anticipating. We know it. And I've been eagerly anticipating talking to you about it. Say that right. Does anyone know what I'm referring to? Anyone know? Anyone got a guess? What? What? The washing of the feet. Maybe, but not the one I'm thinking of. It's the Lord's Supper. The Last Supper. As this wonderful painting by Da Vinci so inaccurately describes. They were not sitting like this, okay? It's a great picture, but that ain't what it looked like, okay? But nevertheless, Jesus was definitely eagerly anticipating this event. How do we know? Because it says it right here. And he said, I have looked forward to this hour with deep longing, anxious to eat this Passover meal with you before my suffering begins. It says it right there. He was eagerly anticipating this event. But when you read this verse, it tells us something which I'm sure you all already knew anyway. It wasn't just a Last Supper that he was eagerly anticipating. It wasn't just a last meal together with his men there. Not like what we used to call on the last end of the semester when me and my friends would get together for a Last Supper, we would call it, before we would go home for the summer or whatever. It wasn't just that. It was the Passover meal that he was anticipating eating with his friends there. The Passover meal in all of its tradition, in all of its symbolism, in all of its meaning. That's what he was looking forward to sharing. And you know what the Passover is, right? The celebration, the commemoration of God's deliverance of his people from slavery in Egypt, and how he protected them from the final plague, the death of the firstborn, when they put the blood of the lamb on the doorposts. Y'all remember that, right? And then the death angel would pass over those houses that had the blood on the door. So why was Jesus so eagerly anticipating this Passover? As it says here, why was he looking forward to it with deep longing and anxious to eat this Passover meal with his disciples? I mean, surely they had had Passover meals before, at least one, maybe two before this, with him and his disciples together. And surely all of them had shared many Passover meals as they were growing up in the Jewish community with their family, with their friends, with their relatives. There had been many times that they had had Passover meals before this. Jesus had too. Jesus had celebrated the Passover every year of his life. So what made this one so special? Other than it was going to be the last one, okay, I get that. Other than that, what made this one so special for Jesus? Well, while you think about that, let's talk a little bit about the Passover meal itself. Maybe you've seen this word in connection with Passover. Passover Seder. Y'all ever heard that word before? Passover Seder. Maybe you've wondered about what is that. Maybe you thought, like I did, that Seder is just another word for Passover. It's not. Do you know what it means, Karen?
Well, I talked to you, so I know what it entails. A lot of words are very specific.
Yeah, very specific. Seder means order. This is the order in which all of these things take place. How each part of the Passover meal is to be conducted. There are 15 parts of the Passover meal. They got to be done in order. They got to be done the right way. 15 parts. Y'all get settled in, y'all. It's not going to be a 15-part sermon, okay? We can all be thankful for that. But there are some things that I'd like to talk to you about these various steps, these aspects of the meal, which if we're paying attention, will give us some insight into our faith, and our faith in God into His plan. And by the way, God's plan that we are living out now is not plan B. This was not God being caught by surprise by Adam and Eve messing up in the garden and Him saying, oh, didn't see that coming. I got to put together some new plan. No. No. God's plan for His Son to redeem His people was always, always plan A from before the foundation of the world. There never was a different plan. There never will be a different plan. One of the first parts of the Passover Seder is what they call karpas, which signifies a green vegetable. And if you look, which one is a laser here? I don't know if we have a laser. There it is. That's the green vegetable there. Sometimes it's lettuce. Sometimes it's parsley, as is shown here. It's dipped into a bowl of salt water. And you can kind of see, if you look carefully, that there's water there. It's salt water. Salt water represents the tears of the Hebrew people as they were slaves in Egypt. The tears that they shed during the 400 years of captivity there, and slavery there. And as they dip the parsley in the water and pull it out, well, water drips off and it reminds them of the tears. The tears are remembered. And they also remember that they were hopelessly trapped in slavery. There was no way out for them. There was nothing that they could do to get themselves free. There was nothing they could do. They desperately needed God to do something. They needed a deliverer. God sent one. In that case, His name was what? Moses. Y'all know that. Well, Paul reminds us, the Apostle Paul reminds us many times in Romans chapter 6, take a look at that this afternoon when you get a chance, that all of us were at one time slaves to sin. We were all slaves to sin. We were all as hopelessly trapped as the Hebrews were in Egypt. There was nothing we could do to set ourselves free from being slave to sin. And can you see Paul's tears in our own when we realize the hopelessness of the situation? Look what he says here in chapter 7. Oh, wretched man that I am, who will deliver me? Says Paul. Through his tears and our own tears are reflected there. But like Israel in Egypt, neither Paul and neither of us were left helpless. There is a deliverer, as Paul says right here. Thank God the answer is in Jesus Christ, our Lord, our deliverer. Well, you've heard about them eating bitter herbs as part of the Passover meal, right? Bitter herbs. Well, in a modern Passover, it's horseradish that they use. Take a big old shot of horseradish. That's bitter. That'll clear up your sinuses. That's what they use for the most part this year in modern day Passovers. The idea is to remind the Israelites of the bitterness of their slavery, the horrors of slavery. Now, you might think that that would be something no one would be needed. You need to remind anybody of that. You wouldn't have to remind. Oh, yeah, we remember. It was horrible. It was horrible. But you know what? In a couple of generations from the time they left Egypt, there would be nobody who had ever even been to Egypt, much less as a slave in Egypt. Right? There would be nobody who had experienced slavery. And so this is an idea to help them understand a little bit about what it was like. But even more than that, think about during the Exodus itself. It wasn't more than just a couple of weeks or a few weeks after they left Egypt, with the pain of slavery, their backs still hurting from where they had been beaten, the horrors of slavery. It wasn't just a few weeks before they were coming to Moses and saying, "Take us back. We want to go back." They had already forgotten how horrible it was to be a slave. How quickly they forget. How quickly we forget. How often do we look around? How often do we look around and think of how much better those people out there in the world have it than we do here in the church? How much more fun they get to have, right? And God just wants to take away all our fun. Right? And do you remember all those wonderful parties and great things that we used to enjoy back then? All the good times we used to have. Passover helped remind them of how really bad it was. And we need to be reminded too. So when you read Romans chapter 6 this afternoon, then flip over to 2 Peter chapter 2. It'll just take you a few minutes to read through that one. And look how Peter describes that life. That life out there. Take a look at that this afternoon. I think you'll be surprised to see what he says. Well, eventually, you knew this, we'd have to come to the bread and the Passover, the matzah bread. And maybe you heard that, you know, everything in the Exodus was happening so fast that they didn't have time to put yeast in the bread. Didn't have time to let it work through the dough. And so they ended up with this, matzah bread. I heard a rabbi talking about this past week. When he says, you know what, the plagues have been going on for weeks, maybe months, and all of that leading up to the final plague, and suddenly there's no time to make good bread. You couldn't have given those Jewish moms just another couple of hours to make some good bread? And now forever and ever we're stuck with this matzah bread. Oy vey, he said. But then he said, no. That's really not what it's all about. He said, think about when you, as just a regular person, face whatever kind of issues that you face in your life. Relationship issues, work issues, family issues, money issues, whatever. And oftentimes, we know we're facing these things, we know we're going into them, and we know we need to do something about it. And we say, yes, I'm going to do something about it tomorrow. I'll take care of that tomorrow. The matzah reminds us that we need to face it now. It's a reminder that we need to be free now. We need to be free today. The Apostle Paul reminds us of the same thing. Look, Now the time is right. See, your day of deliverance is here. Now. Some versions say the day of salvation is today. Take a look at the matzah bread there. You've seen it before. Can you see the stripes running up and down the bread? Can you see that? Can you see the holes that have been pierced through the bread? You remember this verse, but he was pierced because of our transgressions, crushed because of our iniquities. The chastisement for our shalom, our peace, was upon him, and by his stripes you're healed. Just sit with that one for a second. Leaven or yeast, sometimes used in the Bible, it's a metaphor to describe sin, right? You know the saying, a little bit of yeast makes a whole batch of dough rise. You must remove the old yeast of sin so you will be entirely pure. Back then, in the olden days of the Hebrews and Israelite nation, and even today, to this day, practicing Jews, as they prepare for Passover, will clean the house. And the idea is, we're getting rid of anything in here that has yeast in it. It has leaven in it. We're going to get it out of the house entirely. So all the good bread taken out of the house. All the good cookies and cakes are taken out of the house entirely. And the house is cleaned. And I heard something that was really interesting that, that's women's work, right? Cleaning the house. They actually leave a little bit of dirt or dust for the men to pick up with a feather, which they put on a little piece of wood, and they go and find that little pile of dust that the lady leaves and sweep it up with the feather. And then the men go out into the neighborhood with the other dudes bringing out their little feathers and pieces of wood, and they all burn them together. Isn't that cool? Isn't that kind of a cool community thing that the Jewish men even do to this day? But anyway, the house is now ready for Passover. There's no yeast, there's no sin, if you will. And we know that Jesus was untouched by sin. But we have a great high priest who has gone into the very presence of God. Jesus, the Son of God, our high priest, is not one who cannot feel sympathy for our weaknesses. On the contrary, we have a high priest who was tempted in every way that we are, did not sin. And then you remember Jesus described himself as bread. I'm the bread of life, he said. And so, the matzah bread of Passover really shows all of this. But it gets even better. The bread is brought to the table, the Passover table, in what is called a matzah tosh. Little bag kind of thing. They come and they bring the bread to the table. And if you look really carefully, you'll see that in all of these matzah toshes, as they call them, there's like three pockets, three compartments. It's divided into three compartments or pockets. And a piece of matzah is put in each pocket. Well, when it comes out to the table, the host of the Passover meal, usually the dad, but whoever is hosting the Passover meal, removes the piece of matzah from the middle compartment, the middle pocket. He holds it in his hand and he breaks it into two pieces and he blesses it. And y'all know the blessing, don't you? Blessed art thou, O Lord, King of the universe, who bringeth forth bread from the earth. That's the traditional prayer. They say it in Hebrew, which I can't begin to say, but that's what they're saying. He breaks it in half. And it's difficult to do it exactly right. So one piece is usually a little bit larger than the other. They put the larger piece back into the tosh. And the other half, they put into a special bag or wrap it in a clean napkin, and then they take it off and hide it. They take it off and hide it somewhere to be found and brought back later. And it's called an aphikomen. That's what they call it, aphikomen. And if you ask a modern-day Hebrew Jew, they'll say, aphikomen, that means dessert. It's the last thing we eat when they bring this piece back, the aphikomen. It actually means that which comes later, that which comes later. And today they kind of make a hide-and-seek game out of it, you can see here, so that the kids will have something to entertain them a little bit. And the kid finds it, and whoever brings it back gets a little reward, a piece of money or whatever. But probably you're already seeing some of the amazing symbolism here. Here's a slightly different look at it. The tosh, the three in one. Do you see that? The three in one. The middle one comes out and it's broken. And that broken piece is wrapped in a clean napkin and hidden away, only to return later to be shared by all. The modern Jews wouldn't tell you this. They wouldn't say, well, that's an obvious representation of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, three in one. They wouldn't say that. What they typically say is, oh, that's the three patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They don't actually know. Or they'll say it means God, the priests, and the people. All the symbolism of the Passover. And we hadn't even begun to talk about the Lamb. Jesus, the perfect Lamb, takes away the sins of the world. We hadn't begun to talk about the blood. But getting back to where we started, why do you think Jesus was looking forward to this Passover? Maybe you see why he was so eager to share this Passover. It should be clear that from its very beginning, Passover was about Jesus. It was always about Jesus. It was always pointing to Jesus. The Passover showed in a small way the redemption plan of God. His plan from the very beginning of creation. And I think Jesus was so eager to be with them and share with them all of these elements this time, because he knew that in about 4 days, he was going to be able to talk with them very specifically and show them exactly what this ancient ritual meant. Maybe an ancient ritual which maybe for some of them was beginning to become just another one of these things that we do. Another one of these paint by numbers rituals that we just got to go through. We do it without even thinking about it. Without appreciating it. Jesus was going to get to tell them that Passover is a story of the gospel. The story of God's plan for redemption. And if you read one more thing this afternoon, read Luke chapter 24, the last chapter of Luke, and you'll see Jesus does exactly that. He explains it to them. He opens their minds to the scriptures, and they even say how Jesus is revealed to them in the breaking of the bread. It's amazing. And there's more we could talk about. But maybe this has helped enhance maybe a little bit our appreciation for how much God loves us. God who in the Passover drew a picture of his plan to rescue us, to bring us to be with him. Holy Week. We got all types here today, I'm thinking. We got some who are marching into Holy Week with heads held high, with glad and sincere hearts, ready to see and be seen with Jesus. We probably got others of us who are kind of stumbling in to Holy Week, just hardly carrying the weight of sin that's on our back, knowing we're helpless, but knowing not really knowing how to handle it. There's an answer. There is a deliverer, and his name is Jesus, and you'll see him in Holy Week. And others of us are crawling into this week with our hearts burdened by stress, by fear, by grief. Jesus is there for us too. He's there for us too. And if he's been hidden from us, now he can be revealed once again for us this week. I pray that all of us, as we think about the amazing things that happened in Holy Week, I hope we'll all find a way to encounter Jesus once again this week. Let's stand and sing and encourage each other.